The architect of the House legislation that would repeal much of the Dodd-Frank law enacted after the financial crisis has agreed to make a key change to the bill, clearing the way for the full House to take up the measure in the coming weeks. The provision in question would have removed a cap on fees that stores pay large banks when customers use their debit cards. Also yesterday, word from the White House that delay on the fiduciary rule that would have financial advisors acting in your best interest has been delayed. There had been some talk that would have been possibly pushed off in the new Trump administration. That's what we're going to talk about with Doug Myers today from Associated Bank in our thought leader conversation this morning. Doug is with us here on Thursday. We do our thought leader every Thursday. Doug, good morning, and welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here. Good morning to you.
A little bit of developing news over the last 24 hours or so. It looks like the Trump administration, at least for now, is going to allow this fiduciary rule to continue, an Obama-era rule that put stricter requirements on professionals who advise retirement savers on their investments. We talked about that in the past. Your thoughts on this?
We have, and this is somewhat of a surprise. You know, we've been working since last fall on this to implement it by April 10th. And then we thought when Trump was elected, it was rumored to be sidelined for a while. And I guess it was announced yesterday that they're going to move forward. And now the new deadline is going to be June 9th. And so this dramatically changes the way a lot of brokers have to do business with their clients' IRAs and 401k accounts. So it's very significant. A lot of the brokerage houses and investment firms, even such as our investment group, it's radically changing the way we do business with our clients. And I think it's a good thing. I think that it puts the best interest of the clients first. It forces brokers to be advising in a fiduciary capacity, and that's changing the way brokers think and act, I think.
This is going to be the focus of our conversation today because it is one of the bigger decisions that people make is when they bring somebody on to handle their money and talk about money. Wouldn't you agree this is probably right up there?
Absolutely. And, you know, heretofore, the brokers have been commission-based. And I think now when you have to act as a fiduciary in a fiduciary capacity with your client, you're going to be more concerned about what's best for them and less about what you're going to make on a commission if you sell a product to an individual. So it really changes the focus of investment counseling.
I thought we would go through some of the things that people should do if they're getting ready to go into one of these relationships. What is the first and most important thing you would tell people?
Well, there's several, but I think one of the things you can start out at is how are you going to be paid, Mr. Broker? Are you going to make a commission? Are you going to make a flat fee? Are there fees embedded in the products that you're selling me that I might not know about? These could be referral fees. It could be what we call 12B fees. It could be proprietary fees. There's a lot of embedded fees in some of these mutual funds if you go into a 401k, for example. And brokers are now going to have to disclose these fees and say, you know, we might not be able to make a commission anymore, but this is the best product for you based on your financial posture. And we're going to maybe have less of a fee, maybe charge a flat fee, and less commission-based. And I know our brokerage company has been, like I said, preparing for this since last fall, and we've been spending hours and hours on compensation plans, on new regulations, on new rules that we do business with our clients.
This is in addition to this being a big decision, there's a lot of information to digest here for a consumer getting into one of these relationships. It's not like putting in plumbing, is it? It's sort of a little bit more complicated than that, isn't it?
It's very complicated. I think the ruling was 128 pages. One of our compliance officers sits next to me, and he's been working on this literally every day since last fall. As I said, it's a little bit surprising today when we woke up and saw the news because we all thought that this was going to be delayed, if not postponed. permanently. But apparently it's going to go through. I think there's going to be some amendments to it, and there's going to be obviously some changes under the Trump administration. But I think we still have to be prepared to implement this rule, obviously, by the June 9th new deadline.
Mm-hmm. Some say that this relationship, that one of the things you have to remember is not only is someone managing their money, they're in some cases trying to sell you a service too, aren't they?
Well, that's true. And there's a fine line between, as you said, selling you a service and doing what's best and right for the client based on his financial posture, his risk tolerance, and his station in life. You know, you're going to invest differently for a 27-year-old versus a 55-year-old. You know, there's different risk tolerances. There's different timing issues on how long you have to invest in the market based on how long you're going to be working versus how long you're going to be into retirement.
Let's go through some of the red flags that might pop up. Number one, a financial advisor talks more than they can listen, or more than they listen.
Well, that's a good one. You know, when we sit down with a client, we want to ask questions. We want to listen. We have to find out where he is, where his risk tolerance is, what his needs are, what his family situation is. You want to know all these things going into a relationship like that and not just be able to enter into it by selling product.
Another one is they always promise that they will beat the market.
Well, that's a big no-no in the rules of investment management. You can't promise anything. You have to be very careful about what you say about certain investments. You know, you want to beat the benchmarks, but you can't guarantee anything because nobody has a crystal ball and nobody can guarantee what's going to happen in the world as to what's going to, how it's going to affect investments.
Another one is feeling pressure to buy. This shouldn't be like a car salesman, car buyer relationship, should it?
Well, I think those days are going to be long gone, and I think that's one of the reasons why this ruling went into effect. There are high-pressured sales. I think people need to step back and really analyze what's best for them, especially in something as important as investment management.
How important is it, too, that in addition to them listening to you, that they don't make decisions that you're not aware of? You have to have sort of a role in all of the decisions being
made. Well, you
do,
and you have to have a complete picture. You know, one of the challenges we have in investment management is understanding a person's whole financial picture. You might have a piece of someone's wallet share, as we like to say, meaning you might handle a portion of their investments, but not all of their investments. And it's important to know how your investments are going to work in concert or in varying degrees with other investments you might have. And so it's important to be diversified. It's important to have different amounts in different sectors. And that means small cap stocks, large cap stocks, international stocks. So there's a lot of different strategies you can go into an investment management relationship. And you want to make sure you know the whole picture and not just maybe the picture that you're looking at. Does that make sense?
It does. Another red flag, too, would be that they put you with the youngest person in the firm, the most junior person on the list.
Well, you know, I can't address that. I know in our firm we have very experienced professionals. We typically, in a bank like Associated, we don't have junior people. We tend to hire more tenured and experienced people in the financial business. But I think that's a very important aspect to look at.
One of the other things, and we've talked about this before, it's sort of that personal relationship, too. I mean, if I were to come and sit down with you, immediately I would feel comfortable. That's the other thing, too. The person has to feel comfortable, feel that personal relationship. You have to give that back.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think that when you're sitting down and interviewing a financial advisor, you do have to have a comfort level. And you have to feel comfortable with his experience, his or her experience level. And you have to understand his or her strategies. And that's very important. And experience plays into it. How many cycles you've gone through in the market is important. You know, a junior person necessarily hasn't gone through different ups and downs in the market, and there will be ups and downs in every cycle. And so I think experience plays into that way.
One of the other red flags that jumped off the screen at me was push to manage your 401k, your old 401k. A lot of us have these company-managed 401ks. Should that even be on the table when you go see a financial advisor?
I think it should, and that goes back to the whole financial picture. And, you know, when you leave a company, you have the opportunity to either leave it in the company if you're happy with their investment management strategy and their choices of funds, or you can move it into a rollover IRA or move it to the new company's 401k as well. And so you have a lot of different options to keep that 401k intact. And you do want to sit down and make sure that it's performing like you thought it would be performing, and it's working in concert with the other investment accounts you may have outside of the 401k or within the 401k.
That's the big part of this. Most people just sort of put these 401ks in action and then forget about them, don't they?
They do, and sometimes that's not a bad thing if you're allocated the way you need to be, mm-hmm. and you just sit and watch it grow. Other times you might want to tweak it on an annual basis. You might want to rebalance the account. So there's different ways to do that, but you know, you're hopefully putting money into it every pay period, whether it's monthly or every 2 weeks, and you do want to set a strategy, let it work, and just contribute the money out of your paycheck every pay period, and it will grow over time.
Another topic I thought we'd hit today, and this we talked about this when we were looking at trends for this coming year, private banking as an export industry. I'm still kind of scratching my head about this one. I don't understand exactly how it works. So maybe you could tell us, how is it an export industry?
Well, I think a lot of the private bankers throughout the world act differently. Some act like investment counselors. Some are experts in credit and banking products. And so I think the gist of what I've read about that is how the different private bankers act within different firms. And that can be very different industry-wide. And so, you know, you talk about the Swiss private banker mm-hmm. who manages, you know, millions of dollars for clients and they want to be in secret Swiss bank accounts. You know, we're not really that way in this country. Private bankers are more dedicated to, I think, credit needs of individuals. So, you know, that's a hard question because the definition varies not only from institution from institution, but countries to country.
And it's one of those also one of those topics, too, that sort of has that shadow on it of something nefarious. So you mentioned the Swiss banking account. Whenever I hear the phrase Swiss banking account, I always think of something negative, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. It probably isn't, right?
Well, it's both, and I agree with you, but at the same time, there's very reputable firms across the pond, so to speak, and I think that, yes, there's plenty of good firms that are very reputable.
So as we look ahead here to the next month or so, anything on your radar screen that we haven't talked about today that you want to bring up?
Nothing. I think the trend is continued rate increases. We're anticipating 2 or 3 the rest of this year. Whether that happens or not, we've been surprised in the past, but I think we're seeing a definite trend for rate increases. I think that's going to happen a couple more times this year, and I think that'll be good for the economy. I think it'll be good for you know, the markets continue to be up. The markets continue to be optimistic about things. And so let's knock on wood and hope for the best.
You know, the markets seem to be ignoring all of the political chatter, right, and just doing what they do.
Well, they do. And I think the market builds in optimism. And, you know, the markets we see are kind of a lagging indicator on what the public feels like is going to happen in the future in terms of the economic the headwinds or the tailwinds.
You mentioned the Fed. One of the Fed presidents was out yesterday talking, the Philadelphia Fed president. He said those folks who are betting against a rate increase in June probably making the wrong bet. So that's
a telling comment,
right,
isn't it?
Yes. Can't get any more clear than that.
Right, exactly.
Doug, it's good seeing you as always. We'll talk to you again next month.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Doug Myers is Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page, and you can follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. Our thought leader conversation every Thursday.